I went through a range of unprintable emotions before reaching anger, which is where I am right now. Jim McCormick, Kathleen's brother. Welcome to Grimly. It felt like today driving here that I was showing up to school and I hadn't done my homework.
Oh, you were like, wait, I'm not prepared. Something's wrong.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, wait a minute. I'm fucking up. But I haven't, because it's all you, baby.
Welcome to Grimly.
Welcome to Grimly. This is Missy.
And I'm Meg. And you have asked me to
do this story,
to reverse roles and yes, do this story today,
because it is our 1 year anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Happy anniversary.
Cheers. Cheers. We are drinking a magnum of champagne.
So
we are sharing it. We are not prepared. The only ones drinking it,
but yeah, we're sharing it with your husband.
But to say that it is a special occasion.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm good. How were... We did just talk about our holidays, but I'm going to ask you again. How were your holidays?
They were mostly good, yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quiet.
Quiet's good.
Yes. We did this thing this year where my sister and... Or my siblings and my dad and our spouses and niece and nephew did... Where everybody buys the same gift for everyone else.
Okay.
And it's just like your favorite thing. I feel like we must talk about this. I don't know.
But I think I might delete it.
Oh, good. Okay. So we, yeah. So you just like buy whatever your favorite thing is, mm-hmm, and you give it to everybody. So it's kind of white elephant-ish.
Okay.
But also everyone gets an individual gift. And it was just funny and silly. Just as the kids were super excited about it. Yeah. And nephew got us. So funny. His favorite thing and the gift that he got everybody was a first aid kit. Just the cutest thing ever.
That's so random.
I know. Little kids are so random. He's like six. And that was the thing he got for everybody.
You know what? It's useful.
I know. So it was, anyway, it was fun.
That's cute. That's actually
like,
very cute.
I had never heard about that. My sister suggested it. And I was like, hell yeah. Because like, I'm just like not a great gift giver.
Yeah.
I don't care about it. I don't really care about receiving gifts either. So I'm just like, I don't know what to do. So it made it easy for me.
Totally. That sounds way more fun than like a white elephant, I think.
Yes.
Because like white elephant, it's usually just weird crap you don't want.
Well, some of it is weird crap you don't want, but at least everyone gets the weird crap that you don't want.
But then it's all just going to end up in the trash or donated or like sure, just adding more garbage to the world.
Yeah, well, yes.
So sorry, that's my...
That's a part of the reason I don't really care about doing the gift thing generally. I'm like, yeah, I don't need anything. I'm yeah, fine. And I know you don't need anything either. Calm, stop.
And I think with adults too, it's like anything I would want to get you is either way too expensive.
Exactly.
Or you probably would get yourself.
Exactly.
Yeah. It was funny. I did do this. So we have this bottle of cinnamon tequila liqueur.
Mm-hmm.
That keeps going from household to household.
Oh, fun.
In my family, because no one wants it.
Oh, okay.
But my sister, my brother-in-law, they gave it to me to give to another family member of ours for their birthday in August. And I was like, no, I'm going to give it to you for fucking Christmas.
Did you?
Yeah.
Was it funny?
It was very funny.
Oh, I love that.
He was like, I wanted to call you a bitch so bad in front of everybody, but there was kids there.
It's not that serious. That's it's hilarious. No,
but like, you're like, oh, you bitch, you got me. So I'm expecting that back.
That's good. Oh my God, I love it.
It's like the traveling
thing.
Okay,
if you get it back, you have to bring it so we can taste it.
Oh God, it's like cinnamon liqueur tequila.
I mean, it sounds like it's not that bad. You put it in some hot cocoa?
Maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I can't fathom what it's like.
I can't either.
Hmm. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Yeah, we survived.
We did.
Are you doing... Obviously, you're not doing January.
No, my birthday's in January.
That's true.
I fucking refuse.
Yeah.
You know, in fact, I'm mad at everyone else for doing January, usually.
I usually do it, but I'm not, obviously.
Do you know what I do? Sometimes I think, oh, I won't drink until my birthday. That's mostly dry.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually don't succeed. But I've never tried that hard, to be fair.
It's generally I do it, but with the current administration coming in.
My God.
I am definitely not
going to. So you can wait till the 20th then?
No, I'm going to be wet 24/7.
Well, it's already. It's too late. I've seen you drink that.
The wettest January.
Before we get started, I'd need a refill.
We are switching things up for the 1 year anniversary.
Okay.
Meg is going to do the story.
I am going to do the story.
You're going to do the story because.
You've asked me to.
Yeah.
To be clear.
I suggested it. I didn't say you had to.
No, I wasn't
first of
forced.
All.
It wasn't forced.
But also, I think, I mean, originally, I wanted it to be every other week we did a story.
Oh.
Remember?
No.
Do you not remember that?
No, I probably squashed that immediately.
You did. You're like, I'm thinking more of a... I'm just here for the vibe. Terrible.
Well, I have to say, I told you I was like, oh, I don't really want to do a ton of writing.
Yeah.
I was trying to figure out all the ways to do a ton of writing, and I wrote nearly every word of this, so I have to give it to you that it's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work. I think doing research and have done it for, I don't know, 43 episodes so far, I definitely have gotten better at it.
Yeah.
I think the first couple sets of notes for episodes, I was handwriting them. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do.
I know, it was really sweet. But then, like, you want to add pictures and...
That's true. I did think about you and I have a couple of photos to show you.
Oh, okay.
Not a lot.
Yeah. But do you want to tell the class what we're talking about?
Yes. Okay, so this was hard for me because I've consumed a lot of media about this
topic. Yes, you have.
And so it's hard because there's just so much content. And so I found it very hard to try to... I think we're going to do 2 episodes.
Probably 2, yeah.
I have 10 pages of notes.
That's probably about 2. I think... And the reason why I wanted you to do this is because I know how immersed you are into this. Because if I were to do it, it would be like me... It'd be like the student telling the teacher.
Yeah, this would be a tough one probably to do for me.
Yeah. But I was like, you know what? You should do it. Because I think it'd be fun. Fun is not the right word, but...
I know, because this is rough.
This is a rough story. This is definitely...
But I think it is entertaining. Amusing. There's some amusing parts.
We're definitely putting on our true crime hats.
This is a true crime episode.
Yes.
Okay, so this case spans 40 years, 3 murders, a Hollywood movie featuring Ryan Gosling, 2 criminal trials, and a hit HBO documentary called The Jinx, which, if you haven't watched, I highly recommend it.
Yes.
I've seen it 3 times. I think it's a work of art. Love it. I'm going to talk about the life and crimes of Robert Durst.
Yeah, you are.
And before we get started, I also want to give a shout out to True Crime Obsessed.
Okay.
Because they do, it's another podcast.
Yeah.
And they recap true crime content.
Oh, right. Yeah. You told me about this one. Yeah.
And so they did a recap of each of the episodes of The Jinx, and there are 2 seasons. Mm-hmm. And so, because I've watched the movie or the doc a number of times, re-listening to their recaps while we were on our road trip really helped make things fresh.
Okay.
I didn't have to watch it a fourth time.
See, I've only watched The Jinx once.
Okay, good. So some of this will be new to you.
Yeah, I haven't watched the second season because I knew we were doing this, so I didn't want to...
I'm going to try not to talk exclusively about The Jinx, but they're so intertwined in the story that
You have to talk about it. I mean, the only thing I think, should we talk about The Jinx right now?
No.
Okay.
It's all in the narrative.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right. So I tried to do it like chronologically as much as possible.
A timeline.
Yes. And I'm channeling you in my notes so that like stylistically it's similar. Okay.
Thanks for calling me. Tell me I have style.
I just want to sound like someone else's podcast all of a sudden.
No, that's fair.
Okay, so Robert Allen Durst was born April 12th, 1943, in New York City to real estate magnate. That's a word we've used before.
Have we?
I think so.
Oh, Alfred Lowenstein.
Uh-huh. Yeah. I was like, we've had a magnate. I was like, don't ask me what their name was.
It's in here.
Anyway. Born to New York City real estate magnate Seymour Durst and his wife Bernice Hurstein. Robert is the oldest of 4 children.
Okay.
So it goes Bob, Douglas, Wendy, and Tom in the order of oldest to youngest.
So he's Bob?
Bob, yes, Robert or Bob. Okay. I'll call him Bob a lot.
Oh, mostly okay. I'll call him Bob.
Really?
Yes.
I've never heard him being called Bob.
Yeah, most people. Bob.
Okay.
There was some lore behind it.
Oh, really?
Yes, because it's a documentary, right?
Yeah. So
he is caught on camera or in recorded jail phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And so he'll call somebody and leave a voicemail. And every time the phone, or it's like when you call somebody from prison and mm-hmm. it'll say, oh, you're receiving a message from, you know, inmate. And then he'll say, Bob.
It's like just, a foghorn.
Yes, it's just always like, Bob. Just repeatedly, like, all throughout the episode.
It's like a frog just, croaking.
They call him Bob, they call him Bobby.
Okay.
Yeah, so Bob, and then Douglas, and then Wendy, and then Tom.
Okay, so he's the oldest of four.
He's the oldest of four.
Okay.
Which was surprising to me. He doesn't really have that kind of energy. He has a younger fuck-up type of vibe than, like, oldest child energy to me.
I'm the youngest.
Sorry, I'm a middle child, so I get both of those. The middle child is the worst of everyone, technically.
That's funny.
Anyway, okay, so his father was a prominent New York City real estate investor and developer. His family builds Manhattan skyscrapers.
Okay, so the nepotism is alive and well.
Definitely.
Okay.
So Seymour took over the family business from his father. After his own father died in 1974, the family business is called the Durst Organization.
Okay. Is it still around?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes. Seymour also, this is a fun fact I did not know, but I learned through my research. Seymour also created the National Debt Clock in 1989
really?
To raise awareness about the growing U.S. national debt.
Holy shit.
I know. It's still kind of a legit New York family dynasty.
Yeah.
Yep.
Also, I did not know the debt clock was that young.
I know. Well, 89, it made you to believe that we didn't have a whole lot of debt before Wall Street.
True.
Anyway. Okay, so more about his childhood.
Okay.
In 1950, when Robert was seven, Bernice, his mother, died after falling from the roof of their family home.
What?
She fell from the roof of their family home.
Do we know why she was up there?
Not necessarily, but I'll get into it a little bit.
I'm
Robert
sorry.
Claimed to have witnessed her death, which is a traumatic event that reportedly had lasting impacts on him. When he talks about this event on camera in his 70s, he still refers to Bernice as mommy.
Gross.
Mommy. And he's got this very thick New York accent. So
yeah.
I'll be doing a lot of paraphrasing and quoting of Bob Durst in my best Bob Durst accent. Anyway, it will come up.
Yeah, yeah. You got it.
So in Bob's retelling of the story, his father wakes him up one night and kind of drags him to an upstairs room where he sees his mother standing on the roof in a likely attempt to take her own life.
Oh.
He says his father tells him to wave at mommy. Bob says he watched her fall to her death at this point and that it stuck with him. And that plus the funeral was just beyond traumatizing. And so he brings this up later in life as a reason for maybe he is the reason. Or the way he is.
This is the trauma that started the catalyst of the thing.
Yes,
okay.
So he's sort of. But his younger brother, Douglas, says the story is a fabrication. She did die.
Okay.
But Douglas does not think she witnessed it. He was like, we weren't around when this happened. And then
interesting.
When she did die, they like whisked the kids away.
Okay.
But Bob claims that he saw the whole thing. Who knows?
Yeah, I think the hard thing with him specifically, from what I remember, is he's just a major fucking liar.
Oh, yeah, he lies.
Yeah.
He's not a credible.
No, like, not a credible
source.
Dude.
Whatsoever.
Okay. Interesting.
Hmm? But who knows?
I didn't lie about that, though. That's crazy.
Well, I think you might lie about it if you
have
we'll find out maybe why he had reason
you're right.
How traumatized he was. More on his sibling relationships. He definitely had a strained relationship with his siblings, marked by rivalry and allegations of abuse.
Okay.
There is a 2005 deposition in which his siblings are interviewed about his abusive nature in childhood.
Okay.
His brother Douglas is quoted as saying, I was aware he was violent since I was 4 years old.
Whoa.
And then his youngest brother Tom states that his first memory of Bob was sitting on the carpet playing with a toy and Bob walks up for no reason and hits him.
Ugh.
And Tom is quoted as saying, he was trying to kill me from the day I arrived. And then when he was asked, did you tell your father about what happened? And he said, I doubt it. My father was like, quote, a visiting duke
I didn't see him very often.
Okay.
I may have told the governess, who may have told my father.
They have a governess?
Yes. That's what I'm saying. This is important. This just is to, like, paint the picture of this money, type of shit.
Mm-hmm.
The governess. It's like Succession, but worse.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow.
I know.
It's... So he just was always bad?
Always bad.
It's weird that, like...
But I think the family has reason to be like, oh, no, he's not like us at all. He's very different. He's very bad.
True.
So, okay. But those things could still be very true. I mean,
trying to save their own asses. I guess both things could be true, right?
Both things could be true.
But it's just weird, like, how there are some people like that that are just born just bad. There's just something wrong.
There's, like, something different about them.
Like, their brain is just not wired correctly. And they're just evil.
Yes.
Ugh, creepy. Fits here. It really makes you not want to have kids. What if you have a bad one?
What if you have a bad one? All right, so we're going to talk a little bit about his work life. There's not much, if you could imagine.
Yeah, because nepotism.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
God bless it.
Old money, baby.
Bob, quote, worked for the Durst organization from the 1970s to about 1994.
Okay.
But when he was interviewed, he summed up his work there like this. My titles? I had various important sounding titles, but I didn't really go there very much.
I love the voice.
I have to.
You have to.
So yeah, that was how he thought about his own work at the Durst organization.
Honestly, if I could do it, I'd
probably. Yeah, I don't even blame him. Maybe he's a smart one. You're getting paid and you're really not doing the job.
Just barely showing up. It sounds fucking great.
We'll talk a little bit more about his work. So
maybe
some
because we're just in late stage capitalism, we feel that way.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Thanks to these people. The theme throughout this is money.
Yeah.
In this story.
Right.
He has also at one point purchased a property with a friend of his and converted it into a tenement building. This was in the 80s. So with I won't even say the guy's name, with a friend that I don't really approve of.
Okay. Is that New York?
Yes.
Okay.
But it's giving slumlord.
Oh, gross. Okay. That tracks.
They buy old buildings, flip them into slightly better buildings, and then rent them out. Or they go into what is already a tenement building and push people out.
And make the rent a lot higher.
Yes. And I know there's like rent control situations in New York City, so I don't know all the details, but they do whatever they can to make it uncomfortable for people.
It's gentrification.
So that they leave.
Gentrification at its finest.
Yep. It's like more billionaire type bullshit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. God, gross.
I know. There's a lot of gross.
Yeah. Sorry. I'll probably say that a lot.
No, you can't keep it up.
Yeah.
Be astounded repeatedly. Okay. We're going to talk about his first wife.
Okay.
Kathleen. Robert meets Kathleen McCormick in 1971. I have a photo of her.
Okay. Wait, is Kathleen okay.
Mm. Yeah.
Yes. I gotta say this right. This man's fucking eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Someone talks about like shark eyes or like dead eyes, I think of this fucking guy.
They're black. Yes.
They have no color, which I guess is technically what black is. It's so fucking creepy.
I know. I guess you could argue that they're very dark brown, but there's something about his eyes that people talk about a lot.
Yeah.
That there's like it's a hollowness.
Like the beady
black.
They're like strikingly like he looks like a fucking demon a little bit.
Although not terribly unattractive, this is a moderately attractive couple in the 70s.
Yes, it is a moderately attractive couple in the 70s. He looks like he's playing normal.
Yes.
For sure.
I mean, this isn't a great photo. There are better ones, but I didn't.
Yeah, but there is something wrong with that man's eyes.
Yes.
Not
probably
like,
because it's a window into his dark fucking soul.
Exactly. That's what I mean. It's not like he has a disorder.
The eyes are formed correctly
for this man. Yeah.
There's something else happening.
Yeah. He doesn't have a problem medically. There is something there that is lack thereof or, lack of a soul, I guess, is probably the best way to put it. But just like the beady, dark shark eyes. That's all I think about when I hear this man's name.
Shark eyes explicitly describe him and his eyes.
Yeah.
Okay, so Kathy McCormick Durst was born June 15th, 1952.
Okay.
She grew up near New York City as well and comes from a lovely working class family whom she was very close to. She had also had a close group of girlfriends. She was intelligent and determined and, like, fantastic in every way.
The quote-unquote lights up the room type of person.
Kind of person.
Yeah.
She was working as a dental hygienist when they met at a party in the fall of that year, 1971. And the internet says that they met and Bob, like, very quickly talked her into moving up to Vermont to open a health food store he would name All Good Things. And I will circle back to that.
Yeah.
But think about, you're just like a normal girl. Uh-huh. You're in your, God, I'm not doing the math properly, but
she was born in the 53.
She was like 19 when they met. Yeah. 52 and they started dating in 71.
Yeah, she was 19. She's
and he's
young.
9 years older than her.
Huh.
He's well off and he's sophisticated and he's not terrible looking. And I
he's got money.
Yeah.
For lack of a better word, in that era.
That would be very intoxicating. Uh-huh. I do not blame her at all.
Yeah, that young, for sure.
Yes. So he convinces her to go up to Vermont. They spend about a year in Vermont before they move back to New York so that Bob can go to work for Seymour at the Family Biz.
Okay. And Seymour's his brother?
His dad.
Oh, his dad, sorry.
They will then go on to marry in April of 1973. So pretty quickly, it's like a year and a half.
Yeah, so she's like 21 when they get married. Yeah, very young. Damn, she's very young.
It was his 30th birthday.
Ugh.
The marriage was strained. Despite an outward appearance of happiness, they definitely had troubles.
Yeah.
And I say they had troubles, and I don't mean that. I mean he was troubled, and she was married to him.
Okay.
Friends and family reported...
She wasn't the problem.
Yeah, just like, this is a very one-sided problem.
Yeah.
Friends and family reported instances of Robert's controlling behavior and abuse. He was physically abusive.
Okay.
She wrote about it in her diary. She told people about it, like, including his family.
Okay.
Her family witnessed it on at least one occasion.
Yeah.
And Bob admits to it in, like, various forms of media and interviews over the years.
So he was like, yeah, I did that.
Yes. He was also reportedly cheating.
And of course
then
he was.
At one point, forced her into having an abortion after they became pregnant, which was, like, pretty rough.
Traumatic. Yeah. It's just classic grooming shit.
Yes.
All of it is. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to say it's almost, I don't know. It's, this story probably wouldn't have been that big of a deal if what happens after. It would still be, it would be like the classic true crime case that we would talk about. But this became such a big deal.
It's the tale as old as time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fucked up fairy tale, right?
Yes.
We've seen it. We've heard about it. We talk about it. And it is something that's continuing to happen. It's very tragic.
Yes.
But
it's
yeah.
not an abnormal
story. It's not an abnormal story, not an abnormal situation.
Yeah. It's a mediocre dude.
Yeah.
Less than mediocre.
Right.
Wreaking havoc on the people around him.
Right. And some poor woman who was, like, too young to know better. Ugh, God.
I don't imagine. So, like, you're with a bad man. Mm-hmm. He's doing bad things to you. And he's also he's a billionaire.
Yeah.
Or his family's worth billions.
Right.
Like, that's scary.
It's got to feel very,
you're trapped. Suffocating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Suffocating. You're trapped.
Ugh, yes.
Poor woman.
Okay. So, despite the hell that Kathy's dealing with,
mm-hmm.
by 1978, she's got a nursing degree and she's going to medical school to become a doctor.
Wow. Smart lady.
And then by 82, so what is that?
4 years.
They have been married now since 73.
9 years.
She's ready to leave him.
Good for her.
But in January of that year, she's treated for facial injuries after an instance of abuse. So we know she's going to leave.
Yeah.
And not a lot of details. But yes,
bad enough to have to go to the hospital.
He beat her up. And that was like early January of 1982.
Okay.
So January 31st, 1982 is the last time she's ever seen.
Jesus.
So that was earlier in the year, uh-huh. earlier that month, she's in the hospital.
Yeah.
And then by January 31st, no one ever sees her again. So she goes missing after leaving a friend's house party in Connecticut.
Okay.
She reportedly goes home to their place in South Salem, New York, which is a suburb of New York City.
Okay.
It's not like upstate, but it's not
in New York City proper.
Yeah. It's not in New York City proper.
Yeah. You can get to the city.
I'd say like 40 minutes probably.
Okay.
Okay. So he says she goes home to their place in South Salem where they have an argument. He claims that he dropped her off at the Katona train station in New York near their home, where she intended to travel to their Manhattan apartment, basically, like, to get away from him.
Okay,
like,
and this is Robert saying this.
Yes, he says, I took her to the train station.
Okay.
And also, according to Bob, he was able to reach her by telephone after she got to their apartment in the city.
Interesting. Okay.
It's like a proof that
she was there. I guess, I mean, it's not like there's cell phones. I guess you look at the phone records. Is that coming up? Sorry.
It's not. So the problem, because there's so much murder and crime in this story, I can't go into, and I could go into every single detail.
Yeah. But we just don't have time for that. So I'm glossing over some things.
Okay.
Which, if you watch the documentary, you can catch all of the things.
Yes. Yes. And so we don't know if he actually called her or if that even that phone call occurred.
We will learn later that he's full of shit and lying.
Okay.
Of course, but not a surprise, right?
Right. Like, shocking to nobody.
Okay, so February 1st, so she goes missing January 31st. The next day, a woman claimed to be Kathy calls the dean of her medical school and says she's too ill to attend the first day of a pediatric clerkship. Now, I don't know a lot about what a pediatric clerkship is, but I know that it's like, it's something that people don't miss.
Okay, it's like you don't miss.
No.
I feel like any sort of medical school related stuff, you just don't miss.
Exactly.
Being a medical student has to be like really fucking hard.
Yeah, completely. In the documentary, they do interview people from the school, or like people that like would have been like in medical school. Mm-hmm. And they're like, it is unheard of for people to call out for something like this. You could be throwing up in the bathroom and like near passing out, but you would still find a way to be there. And like, and then you get sent home, but you don't fucking call out.
Interesting. It's
kind of like working in a restaurant.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Like, I've got to be there for my job.
Right. And like, you have to show them you're actively puking and then they'll send you home.
Uh-huh.
Which is fucked up.
So it's just like, you know, she calls and says, I'm not coming because I'm too sick.
Yeah. And everyone's like, weird.
Well, now in retrospect, everyone's weird. But at the time, it was like, okay.
You're like, I guess you're just dropping out, essentially, what it sounds like.
Yeah.
It's almost like, yeah, she dropped out.
Yeah. There's a lot of like back and forth about her as a person, mm-hmm. and what she was like in those weeks before she died. And there's a lot of there's really just a lot of, I don't know, people throwing dirt on her name, really.
Okay.
To like deflect, oh, she was doing drugs, and oh, she was doing this.
They're trying to say that like maybe like she just went off the deep end.
Yeah, and she left.
Yeah,
or ran off with somebody or something.
Okay.
Yeah, they're trying to put dirt on her victim name. Blaming.
Yeah, for sure.
But she was getting great grades.
Yeah.
But what if she didn't show up all the time? Probably because she was getting beat up at home.
Yeah.
And might have been going through something.
Right.
So if she was missing classes at any time, there's a probably a very likely good reason for that.
And yeah, totally.
Because of her husband.
Yeah.
So anyway, Bob does not report her missing for 5 days.
Jesus.
His accounts of the evening have been inconsistent, and he refused to take a polygraph. Also, his family never lifted a finger to try to find her.
Wow. They just didn't give a shit.
They did not give a shit. Her family never even heard from them. Not like a phone call, not a letter.
Not a card,
no flowers, nothing.
Wow.
That's your daughter-in-law.
Yeah.
Your daughter's in-laws. They don't fucking, and they're worth this much money and they don't even try to help find her
in like, any shape or way.
They didn't. It was just like she no longer existed to them.
Jesus.
Really gross.
That's very gross. But it is classic billionaire.
It's so behavior sick.
Which is fucking like, gross in general.
I mean, I think just suggests that they had reason to believe that he was involved, because why else would you? If it was truly not an issue, then they could have helped find her immediately.
Yeah. It's interesting because it's almost like, why wouldn't you try to save face?
I don't know how much of detail I'll go into it, but certainly the jinx goes into a lot of detail about it.
Okay, because it's just like, why wouldn't you just try to act like you didn't know?
But also, no one can answer that either at the same time. We can all be like, well, I guess the answer is ultimately because everyone knows he's fucking guilty.
Yeah, everyone knows he's fucking guilty.
We're in a strange position and we have to protect the family name. This is going to look bad
either way.
Yeah. It's also early 80s.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a very different era for sure.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
It gets worse. Oh, wait. They never heard from her. She was never seen again in her body.
So January 31st, she's just gone.
Yes.
She's in the
82.
Wind.
She's never been seen again. Okay. They never found a body. Never. Still to say.
Like, really?
No.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Nobody knows what happened to her.
Wow.
But in June 1990, Bob quietly obtained a divorce from the Westchester County Court for, quote, spousal abandonment. That, God. You didn't even know that. That pissed me off.
That makes me want to, like, I know he's dead. I want to punch him.
Yes.
Like,
it's so bad.
Yeah.
And he did it quietly. Like, her family didn't know. Can you imagine? Like, they suspected him immediately because they saw him like rip her hair out at a family event.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So, like, they knew that
they reasonably knew. If you were dating somebody that pushed you around and then you went missing, I would obviously assume it was him. And then if he went and pulled something shady like that, spousal abandonment
is
like, it's so now almost, they were legally divorced and she was dead.
It's like almost insult to injury. It's
completely.
Not it's almost, you're right. It is.
Poor woman. Like, and there's a lot of reasons to do that.
Yeah.
As if they're divorced, then
he can get remarried.
She has no rights to
anything.
Anything. And then he can get remarried again.
Wow.
Garbage.
Okay. Fucking garbage.
I wish I had something to ring, like a bell to ring or like a sound to make every time we have fighting for garbage person.
You garbage.
God. Okay, so despite suspicions and the case being reopened in the late 90s, no charges were ever filed against Bob for Kathy's disappearance.
Because if they can't find the body, they usually can't make a case out of it. That's a big thing.
Fuck. Yeah, so that's the story. That's, we're supposed to call this Act 1.
Yeah, that's Kathleen's act.
Yes.
Fuck, man.
I know.
I did not know they didn't have a body.
No. They never found her.
Wow.
And?
Real quick.
Go ahead.
Is there any speculation of what they think happened to her?
There's a lot of speculation, and I'll get into why the mob is a topic here, but there's some speculation
New York
that he may have taken her body up to the Pine Barrens, which is like a sandy forest out there where the mob, I don't know if you guys, or if you've ever seen like Sopranos, it's
well discussed. Think actually that is ringing a bell.
But also like they lived on a lake and so they did some diving in the lake, but they did not dredge the lake.
Oh.
So there's that. And I don't think I talk about it in our notes here, but because I happen to have knowledge of this situation, there was a meeting after she went missing, like a family meeting, which was been like a business meeting, if you will.
It's
like a succession. It's a family meeting, but everyone goes to the office and we talk whatever's fucking crisis we're dealing with.
Right, right.
And he shows up with muddy boots. And it was like in the days after, because they're there to talk about what's happening.
Okay.
Her being missing. And he shows up in muddy boots. And some of the family is uncomfortable about this. And it was like, it was noted at the time. But then when they were interviewed later, like, oh, we don't really remember it that way.
Wow. It really is. Everybody fucking knows that he did it.
It's an open secret.
It's an open secret. Wow. How frustrating.
Yeah.
It's, I wish someone would have just taken matters into their own hands.
I know, and nobody does.
Nobody does.
Nobody does.
Okay.
So they reopened the case in 99. By October 2000, the investigation into her disappearance being reopened becomes public knowledge.
Okay.
In November 2000, Bob moves to Galveston, Texas, and rents a dump of an apartment where he begins posing as a mute woman named Dorothy Siner.
Oh my God, I forgot about this.
This is crazy. This story is insane.
Cue the Celine Dion. It's all coming back. It's all coming back to me now.
Okay, so Dorothy Siner is the name of a high school girlfriend he dated, or a high school acquaintance / girlfriend, and he has not seen or spoken to her in years. He basically assumes this woman's identity.
You know what? I liked that name.
God.
I liked the name Dorothy.
Yeah, so he's cross-dressing now, and he's posing as an ugly, mute woman.
What the fuck? With beady black shark eyes.
Yes. And he later admits to police during an interview that he was in disguise, like on the run, and he thought that if he looked strange enough, people would just leave him alone because it made them uncomfortable. That's brilliant.
That is brilliant.
I know, right?
Like, I don't want to give this man any credit, but like, you're not wrong.
Yeah, he's just, oh, I thought.
It's like you're hiding in plain sight.
Yes, dude.
Wow. That's smart, unfortunately.
He's not a total moron, although he is a complete dipshit.
Yeah.
Anyway,
you can not be a total moron, but still be a dipshit.
Yep.
There's logic there. I'm not going to tell you what it is, but you can figure it out for yourself.
Okay, so December 2000.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just everything's happening very quickly. Unceremoniously marries a Manhattan real estate broker named Deborah Sheraton.
So wife number two.
Wife number two now. They get married in the office of a Jewish rabbi. Okay. I said unceremoniously. This is a transaction. Okay, because
he's not Jewish?
I think he is Jewish.
Oh, okay.
But it wasn't like a wedding.
Oh.
You know what I mean? It was like they showed up to this office.
Okay.
And signed some papers and blah, blah, blah. And now they're married.
Oh, okay. That's what you mean. Mm-hmm. Sorry. When you say unceremoniously, I thought you meant like it's a...
Quiet.
It's an idea of a wedding, but there's no like paperwork filed or something.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yes. It is official legal wedding.
Yeah.
But no pomp and circumstance.
Yeah. No fun stuff.
No fun stuff.
No reception. No open bar.
Yeah. So since that day, Deborah Sheridan has been managing his affairs and his finances.
Oh, she's still around.
I will talk about Debbie again later.
Okay.
Debbie.
Yes. Oh, she's even going to call Deborah. She's getting Debbie.
Deb.
Oh, Deb.
The ultimate broad.
Okay.
We like
usually identify. Okay. Well, not all broads are created equal.
Okay. Yes, that's fair.
And usually I do mean this as a compliment, right?
Right. Yeah. You definitely use broad as a...
Well, while it's partially fitting, this one is an unscrupulous cunt.
Oh, okay.
I do not like Deb.
Okay. Unscrupulous cunt is a slur that needs to be used more often.
No scruples. This one has no fucking scruples.
No scruples, all cunt.
Complete.
Okay.
And she is giving cunt.
Is she?
Yes. Not like in... The best way and in like, the worst way.
Like in a drag way, like she's giving cunt.
Not in a cute way.
She's not serving
this is
cunt.
A proper fucking bitch.
Okay. We said cunt a lot in the last 2 minutes.
It is. This one, it is. It's everything if you imagine.
Okay.
With the C word.
Yeah. She's real.
She fits it.
Okay. Okay.
Cool. She fits it.
But I also it. Like.
Well, we'll talk about her later.
Okay.
Yeah. Deb will come up a couple times.
Okay. Okay. So he gets married to her.
He is married to Deb.
In March 2000?
December 11th. Very.
It's not that easy to remember the times.
Oh, it's the tables. They have turned.
I love it. You're just thinking about so many things. You're like immersed in the story and your mind's running. And
that's really funny.
Maybe it's not just you.
But the timeline is important.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So
December.
Yes. December 2000.
Okay.
And I'll remind, once the timeline really comes into, well, there's a lot of foreshadowing. We'll jump around a little bit, but I'm trying to keep it summarized.
Yeah. You're doing a great job.
Thank you.
Okay. So Christmas Eve 2000.
Okay.
Actually, this is act two. We'll call this act two. That little conversation we had about Deb. And the Dorothy Signer.
Yeah.
That was an intermission.
Okay.
Now we're in act two. Okay. So Christmas Eve 2000, the deceased body of a woman named Susan Berman is found in her home in Benedict Canyon, Beverly Hills, California.
Okay.
Susan Berman was an author. She wrote a book about her life called Easy Street as the daughter of famous mobster David Berman, who pioneered the Las Vegas gambling scene. Alongside Bugsy Siegel. He was a proper mobster.
He is a real mobster.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay.
The two of them developed the Flamingo Hotel together.
Is it bad that part of me wants to go back to that mob era Vegas and just
see it?
No.
That was like
the Rat Pack. That was like the whole vibe.
Right?
Mm-hmm. I feel like it's very dangerous. I know. But it also had to be like just like a tinge of fun.
Sometimes I will be scrolling on the internet and I'll see old photos of Vegas, the strip before it was what it is now.
Yeah.
Like, damn, that is... It was just a couple of cool-ass hotels in the middle of the desert.
Right.
There was nothing.
Yeah, it wasn't
Vegas would not be there if it wasn't for these people.
Right.
Especially.
Whether you want to admit it or not.
It's interesting.
It's very interesting. Okay. Sorry.
So they developed the Flamingo and she essentially grew up there. That was like basically her childhood home.
Weird.
I know.
Cool, though. Okay, so Susan's body was discovered by a friend after she failed to respond to meetings and they couldn't reach her by phone. And it was like holiday time, right? So she was supposed to be at like a holiday dinner. They didn't find her.
Okay.
She showed up and she'd missed stuff.
Was she the type of person who doesn't miss stuff?
Yes. So while there was some chaos in Susan's life, I think it was a red flag enough that they were like, well, she wouldn't not show up to like
the dinner. She wouldn't like call or something.
Yes.
Okay.
So someone goes to her house and finds her body in her home. I think there was also dogs. Her dogs were out running around the neighborhood.
Oh.
So it was
alarmed.
Yes.
Okay.
When they find her, she'd been shot in the back of the head at close range. Method often associated with execution-style killings and mafia murders.
Mafia stuff. Okay. Mm-hmm.
There were no signs of forced entry, though, and obviously that suggests that she knew her killer.
Yeah.
And maybe let them in.
Did her ties with her dad make people believe that it was maybe a mob hit? Okay.
Yes.
Even though maybe she probably wasn't even affiliated with it.
Yes. So obviously they immediately thought, is this mob related?
Right. Because just because of her dad, right?
Yes. Okay. And there was also a guy that was managing her who was a suspect because he... Okay, so he was technically, he's called her manager because she was an author, but like she hadn't really done a lot of work in a while. And so because there wasn't a lot of work to do, or she was trying to sell a TV show, and this is the 2000s, right? So yeah, not terribly long ago.
Sopranos era.
Yeah, so it was a kind of like an add-on type situation to The Sopranos. I was going to talk about the Vegas thing. And so she probably could have gotten somewhere, but it wasn't getting a lot of traction.
Okay.
And so this guy that was her manager, I don't even remember his name now, ended up being more like an assistant to her.
Okay.
And they thought he also broke into her home after the police had blocked it off.
Oh.
Probably, I don't know. Maybe he went in there probably to steal something potentially or to take something. Maybe there was drugs there.
Yeah.
Maybe like she had some stuff. He was like, I'm not getting paid from her, so let me go. There's probably a million
jewelry
reasons that he broke in there after she was murdered and still may or may not have been the murderer. But he was also a suspect.
Okay. Okay. Interesting.
So, yeah. Okay. So, no first entry, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
An anonymous note was also sent to the Beverly Hills Police Department the day they believe she was murdered. Mm-hmm. And the note reads, 1527 Benedict Canyon, Beverly Hills, and cadaver.
That was given to the police department or that was found in her apartment?
It was sent to the police department.
Okay. Was that her address?
Yes, it was her address. Okay. And it was basically like alerting the authorities to the location of her body in her home.
Weird.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
The note was written in all block letters or all caps, if you're a millennial. Beverly in the address is spelled wrong with an additional E. So it's spelled B-E-V-E-R-L-E-Y.
Okay.
Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
So it says 1527 Benedict Canyon, Beverly Hills, and then cadaver.
Weird.
And it's addressed in the envelope to the LAPD or whatever. Okay. Why are we talking about this and this woman?
Yeah.
Because Susan Berman was a longstanding friend and confidant of one Robert Durst.
Not his crust. Dressing persona?
No.
Not his drag.
No.
Okay.
No, we're back to Robbie.
Okay.
They met in college at UCLA and were besties ever since. She lost her father, I think, when she was like 12. Her dad died of, I want to say it was cancer.
Not of something mob related?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
And so he lost his parents young, or he lost his mother.
Actually,
she lost both of her parents, if I'm being accurate.
Okay.
They bonded over that.
Makes sense. Yeah.
So they've been best friends ever since they met in college.
Okay. So a long time.
Long time.
Yeah.
So after Kathy's disappearance, Susan basically steps in as the family's spokesperson and she just engages the press on his behalf.
Really?
Yes.
And the family was okay with that?
Apparently. I think the family was like,
we don't want it. We're washing your hands.
You deal with this on your own.
Interesting. Okay. Maybe she felt like she had to step up for her friend.
Potentially, yes.
Huh. Okay.
There's a lot of reasonable speculation that Susan may have been even an accomplice in Kathleen's disappearance, including potentially making that phone call
to the
college, to the dean the day after she disappeared.
Were they ever romantically involved?
I don't believe so, but I think it's fair to say that she kind of is in love with him. Or that she...
You're doing a lot for a man that is not dicking you down.
Yes. So,
for lack of a better word.
It's possible that they were romantic.
Yeah.
So, like, Susan was married previously, and she married a man that was older than her, and he had children. So she had stepchildren.
Yeah.
And then they split up, and... Mm-hmm. She still remained very close to this man's children.
Okay.
So much that they, like, all of her belongings were left to them when she died. And actually, Bobby, I think they called him Uncle Bob. He remained very close to what she felt like were her children.
Interesting.
So they were, like, close, truly tight.
Yeah.
And, like, her mom was married to this mobster.
Yeah.
Father of hers. And she seemed to romanticize that relationship, that sort of ride or die energy.
So I feel like that definitely gets romanticized in general.
It is very strongly suggested that, like, she really wanted that kind of connection and potentially, when given the opportunity, to be that same, like, constant ride or die type of chick for Bob Durst, she was happy to do that.
Okay.
I don't think that makes her a bad person. I think it makes everyone, like, it's just very complicated. Life is fucking messy.
Right, right. Maybe she just really was, like, looking for some sort of...
Yeah, validation.
That's validation, like, or just, like, a connection.
She thinks that someone had said, quoted saying that she thought that's what love was.
Yeah. Interesting. Okay.
Weird. No, it's messy. It's just really messy.
It is messy. Yeah, you're right. You're right. It just seems like one of them or both of them are in love with each other, right?
Possibly.
It's giving that vibe.
Yeah,
to, like, I mean, do all this stuff.
I imagine she was also deeply jealous of Kathy.
Maybe. Yeah.
If she's in love with him.
Maybe it's unrequited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. He did marry someone else.
Yeah. And then she married somebody else. She married
someone else as well.
Yeah, I guess he maybe just got over it, but there was always that. Who the fuck knows?
We'll never know.
Human relationships are very complicated. Anyway.
That's true.
Yeah.
And yes, a lot of it's discussed in the docs. So I'm like, yes, we can go in these
avenues.
Yeah, some of these, like, wormholes, if you will, but
we'll never know. Definitely a legitimate question, I think, for most people.
So Susan is obviously a complicated character in all of this, but she is still a victim.
Right. Ultimately, she is murdered.
Yes.
Yeah.
Friends describe her as generous to a fault and, quote, the type of person to show up at your doorstep in a kimono asking to use the bathtub or to drop off jello and roast chicken when you're sick. A mile-a-minute talker, she was at once manipulative and prone to phobia. All of bridges, elevators, or eggs, even. But she was also brilliant, big-hearted, and above all, loyal.
Weird.
And the loyalty thing is the theme here.
Yeah. Kimono makes me think she may be a little bit manic.
Deb, in a deposition later, described her as manic.
Really?
Yes. She sounds like a vivacious, kind of crazy lady.
Yeah, she sounds like it's a person you'd want to party with.
Yes.
But it's also a person you're like... Maybe you need to be medicated.
Yeah. Actually, yes.
Like, actually. A little bit.
Yeah. So she was like, at this time in her life.
And there's no fault in that.
No.
If you need to be medicated, get medicated.
She was of that age range. I think she was like probably in her 50s, like late 40s or 50s.
Yeah.
Or maybe you're going through some hormonal changes.
Right. Your body's like on the fritz.
Things are changing.
Yeah. Or maybe she's just in her fuck it era.
But she sounds like a cool ass chick.
Yeah. I'm going to show up in a kimono with some roast chicken.
But a woman that made interesting choices, I'll say that.
Yeah. Okay.
Unfortunately, Susan was also facing money troubles at this stage of her life.
Okay.
And owed a lot of people money and was basically, the police described it as living in squalor.
Really?
And in the doc, they recreate her apartment. And I wouldn't call it squalor, but they said there was no carpet in the house.
Okay.
She had a bed on the floor. Like, she had sold a lot of her stuff. Like, it definitely seemed like she was pretty really going through it.
Okay. This is also kind of adding to the manic stuff for me. Yes,
definitely.
Yeah.
So she hits up old pal Bobby Durst, who had reportedly sent her two separate checks for $25,000 in the months leading up to her death.
Wow.
So it's 2000. It wasn't like it was like 40 years ago.
Yeah.
It's expensive. She lives in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
She comes from a fancy lifestyle. She doesn't have a regular job or some enormous inheritance. Yeah. Like, $50,000 is a lot of money, but I don't know how far that's going to go.
Yeah. I mean, it's enough to get someone probably back on their feet.
A little Band-Aid maybe. But
yeah. But if you live in Beverly Hills, but I mean, we could judge and be like, well, maybe she should move somewhere a little less opulent. But
sure. I don't think she had time.
No. Yeah.
So her murder investigation goes cold after suspicion initially fell on her landlord, her business manager that we talked about, and her ties to the mob.
Okay.
So we've got another cold case.
So very obvious stuff. I mean, those are the avenues I'd probably, maybe not the landlord.
I think she had owed quite a bit of money to the landlord.
Then you just evict her.
I know. Anyway, well, the landlord's not the one that killed her.
Okay, I mean, just saying, like, it feels like a stretch, because...
Hey, you know,
they start somewhere, yeah. The mob and the business part assistant thing. Yeah, the
guy
thing.
Who breaks into her house.
Yeah, that makes way more sense. Yeah.
He also, when he signed into he was interviewed, when they have him sign into the interview, I guess you have to sign, I've never been interviewed by the police, but they do make you sign some paperwork.
I mean, I guess I'd have documentation if you were there, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, he also signed his name in block letters, which is like
interesting.
Interesting.
How fucking stupid are you? Sorry.
I don't think he knew about the cadaver note, unless he wrote the cadaver note. But if you write the cadaver note,
but like,
why would you then turn around and also do block letters for your name?
That would be stupid.
Yeah. Thank God most criminals are stupid. I'm just going
to
say that.
I think if there's if you do something crazy like kill someone, there's got to be about a zillion things you have to lie about. And it doesn't seem like it would be easy to keep all those straight.
Yeah. I think that is the core of the story.
All right. So that's the end of Act Two.
Okay. We're ending.
Nope. You mean the pod?
No. Act Two.
We're ending Act Two.
Yeah. We're not ending the pod.
I was like, this is not the end of Episode One.
No.
We're nearing the end of episode one. Does it feel about an appropriate time? Sorry, everyone.
No, I think
it's a foreshadow.
I think it is. Yeah.
Arson Judge.
It really is. I actually haven't looked at the timer. So.
Okay. So, end of act two, start of act three.
Okay.
September 30th, 2001. Again, it's only 2001.
Yeah.
It's all happening very quickly.
It's very quickly.
Police are called to the Galveston Bay. We're back in Galveston.
Back in Texas.
We know who's in Texas. Dorothy Ziner.
The drag queen.
Yes. Okay, so police are called to the Galveston Bay where a teenage fisherman found a headless human torso.
Oof.
What they find at the scene is the previously mentioned torso plus a number of black plastic trash bags.
Oh, no.
Floating in the bay.
Oh, no.
So they find a body, a dismembered body.
Yeah.
In one of the garbage bags was a newspaper with an address. Galveston PD started there. Which kind of leads them to the apartment of a 71-year-old man named Morris Black.
Okay.
So, like, it's probably this guy.
Okay. Oh, so they're assuming. So there's trash in the garbage bags, too?
Yes. Okay. There's trash in the garbage bags.
And the trash has an
address. And the body of a deceased male.
Okay.
Dismembered.
Yeah. Torso.
They don't find the head. Oof. It's the torso and the rest of the body.
Just no head.
No head. Brutal.
That's brutal.
So I guess they don't immediately think, oh, this is a victim, but they have... They find among the trash this guy's address.
Wait, I'm sorry. They don't think immediately it's a victim?
Sorry, they don't immediately think that the address is the victim. But they're like, oh, well, we're going to go up to this address.
Yeah, there is a body part in this garbage that has this address.
Yes.
It would be bad police work not to go check.
Definitely.
Yeah, okay.
So what this address leads them to is the apartment of 71-year-old Morris Black.
Okay.
Who is the victim.
Okay, so... Confirmed.
Yes. And the problem here, so Morris is a victim, but I made the mistake of Googling his wiki page because I want to treat him like I did all the other victims and talk about him. And I wish I hadn't.
Why?
I didn't like what I saw.
Okay.
So I'm not going to disparage this person based on what I saw on Wikipedia, but we're just going to leave it at that. And I will just say that not a person I would like to hang out with.
If you look up Morris, you're going to have mixed feelings about him being a victim, maybe?
I think... Yes.
Okay.
But what we should discuss, though, is that he lived next to a little old woman named Dorothy Ziner. His neighbor is Dorothy Ziner.
A.K.A. Bob.
Yes. So, Bob. When the police investigate the apartment complex, they immediately start uncovering evidence. Like, immediately. Okay. There is literally a bloody trail from Morris Black's apartment to this bitch, Dorothy's apartment.
Oh, my God.
And they, at this point, don't know who Dorothy is. They're just like, that's crazy. So they meet the landlord, and they're like, let's tell us about these people. And they're like, oh, blah, you know, Morris. And there's a little old lady that paid me for a year's rent up front, and she travels a lot. She's not really there all the time.
Okay.
And he was... And so, like, later when they're, like, they go into the apartment because they find the blood.
Yeah.
They find Morris's blood all over the place, and they're like, this is where he was dismembered.
Right. Okay, hold on. Time out.
Yes.
How long has Dorothy been in that apartment? A year?
Okay, so October, Kathleen's disappearance becomes public.
Okay.
November, he moves to Texas.
Okay.
And then he goes back to New York because he, quote, travels a lot.
Right.
December 11th, he marries Deb. And then Christmas Eve, Susan is murdered.
And he's back in Texas?
Well, I don't think he's back in Texas.
So he married a woman while simultaneously living in Texas... As a woman.
Yes. He's on the lam.
How the fuck does that work?
Because he's still Robert Durst. Yeah. Only the people that think he's Dorothy Ziner is the landlord in Galveston. Okay. And the people that see him.
But when he's in Texas, he's dressing as a woman.
Yes.
So this is all happening at the same time.
Roughly.
So yes, he's in a couple of years. Back and forth from Texas. He's doing like a Mrs. Doubtfire, but not in a fun way.
Not in a fun way. And I actually don't think he's flying to see Deb all that much either. He went back there... intentionally to marry her.
Interesting.
And then he bought a ticket to go
back to Texas.
To California.
Oh, to California.
The next day. What? He didn't go the next day, but he bought his ticket the next day to go to
California.
Yep.
Wow. Okay. Sorry. Just want to clarify.
Yeah, there's a timeline that
he's going around sometimes dressed as a woman.
Well, he's on the lam in Texas, and there he's a woman.
Yeah. But he's on the lam from New York, right?
Well, he's got no reason, really, technically, to be on the run. He's not arrested for anything.
I guess he's not accused of anything. He's not fugitive.
He's just acting extremely fucking guilty.
He's just being fucking weird.
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Sorry, I just wanted to clarify.
No, these are good questions. Okay, so when the police investigate the apartment complex, they find the blood everywhere.
Okay.
They know...
In Morris's apartment.
In Dorothy Steiner's apartment.
Oh, in Dorothy's apartment.
They know that's where he was dismembered.
Okay, so they're like, the 71-year-old woman killed a man.
Yeah, they're like, who's this old woman that killed this man? So they go through the apartment and all the trash cans and all the things in the home, and they're like, this doesn't seem like a lady's apartment, apart from like someone saying a lady lives here.
Yeah.
That doesn't seem like a woman's apartment.
Right.
It's just a bunch of man stuff and some ladies' clothes here.
Yeah. I keep focusing on the lady thing. I'm sorry. Do you think he is walking around the apartment dressed as a lady?
Yes. The apartment, people that lived in the apartment complex thought it was a woman. Because he's not a huge guy.
No, he's a small man.
Shrimpy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And he's living as a woman in Texas, even when he's alone.
Okay. So we're going back to Dorothy's / Robert's apartment. Yes. So while they're in the apartment, they find a receipt for a pair of glasses from an eye clinic that need to be picked up by a man named Robert Durst. So that's the first time they're like, okay, so who's this Robert Durst guy?
Yeah.
And it is postmarked for a date that hasn't happened yet. So he's supposed to pick up these glasses in a few days.
Okay.
So Cody Cazales is like leading the investigation for Galveston PD. He's in the documentary. He's fantastic.
Okay.
So he gets in touch with the eye clinic and he says, first of all, he's like, Vegas wouldn't accept these odds that this guy's going to fucking show up.
Right.
Pick up these glasses after but you know, what
you
the
never
hell?
Fucking
he
know.
He swings by and he says, if you find this guy, here's my card. Give me a call. And he fucking gets a call from them. They're like, he was just here. And he's trying to keep him there. Bob shows up to pick up his glasses. He does not stay. But anyway, they track him down quickly.
Okay.
And they find him. I think they pull him over in his car. And in this car, they find a bow saw in his car.
Jesus.
He's immediately arrested for homicide on October 9th. And this is 2001.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And so there's a scene where Cody's talking about it and he's got him in an interview room. Mm-hmm. And Bob is like, you're being arrested for homicide.
Yeah.
And he's, well, what do I do? And he's, well, your bond is set at $250K. Do you have $250K? And he says, well, not on me. And they were all just like, who the fuck is this guy?
Yeah.
This lady, dismembered body in the Galveston Bay. Maybe he has $250K.
Yeah, because they probably haven't, like, Google isn't really a thing.
They did not, they just weren't sure what they were dealing with here.
Yeah.
Well, guess what? He does have $250K. He calls the new Mrs. Durst.
Wow.
Who he's been married to just shy of a year now.
Yeah.
She posts the bond and he's out within 24 hours. And Jesus. Now they're just like, what the fuck? Like, this guy.
It is really wild that you can be found with blood in your apartment, a fucking saw in your trunk of your car, and you can still post bail.
That plus, I will raise you one. I agree with you, and I'll raise you this. It's even more crazy that, yes, you can be arrested and charged with something like that or something dangerous,
yeah,
and you can bond out, and that you can be maybe arrested for some kind of traffic infraction, or maybe you have something on you that maybe you shouldn't have, but it's only totally your business.
Yeah.
And that you still have to pay to get out.
Yeah.
Of jail,
like,
despite technically being innocent.
Like, the logic isn't logicking right there.
It's trash. Again, money.
Yeah, money. Yeah, it's just our justice system is so fucked. Anyways, okay.
The theme. Okay, so he's arrested.
Posted
bond. And he's out. Okay, yeah. So October 16th, he skips his arraignment, and now he's officially a fugitive. He's like, you know what, fuck it.
Shit.
Yeah, I know. They're like, oh, okay, let's go ahead and bail out. Whoever set his bond, actually, you know what, I have a note. I have a note for the prosecutor. I have a note for the judge. I have a note for Cody. You guys needed to do your fucking research about this guy.
Yeah.
A simple Google search would have told you
right
who he was. And then you could have told the judge, we don't want bond.
Yeah. No bond.
He's on the lam now. Yeah. He's on the lam officially now.
Right. Okay.
So while he's on the lam, his brother Douglas, which is his younger brother, mm-hmm. who is the one that's responsible, who's the one that took over the family business. I think this was in like 94.
Okay. He took it over.
Yes. And so I don't think that went well for Bob. I feel like he felt some kind of way. He leaves the family business, but I think Seymour probably made the best choice here.
Where he's like, it's clearly not you, my guy.
Yeah. So Douglas is so afraid for his life, he hires private security for him and his family.
Okay.
Because his brother. Okay, my brother is now like clearly unhinged.
Yeah. And we already think he killed his first wife.
Yes.
Okay.
So November 30th, Bob is arrested at a Wegmans grocery store in Pennsylvania. Sporting a shaved head and shaved eyebrows, he's back on his weird bullshit. He's arrested at a Wegmans grocery store for trying to steal a hoagie sandwich, for which he's caught on camera stealing.
Because he doesn't have any money on him? Because he's on the lam?
Not true. Not true, because when they arrest him, he's got two guns, a little bit of weed, and $38,000 in cash, plus Morris Black's driver's license.
What the fuck is happening? I feel like I'm trying to understand logic of a cat or something. There is no logic.
It does just seem like we're spinning out here.
It's no logic. It's just vibes. And the vibes are very fucking off.
He admits like he was stealing it. Yeah. I don't think he knows why he was stealing it. He's just like,
he's entitled. Wrong. There's something wrong in
the
his brain.
The thing is like, so now when we talk about the shaved eyebrows and the shaved head.
Yeah.
We know he was like, well, I'll dress like a woman because that's so fucking weird. Right. Like people are uncomfortable.
Yeah.
But it worked. And so here he's like, I don't know. Let's try something else. No hair.
Let me just
time.
Be like hairless. Let me just be this hairless mole rat. Yes.
It's just so insane.
It is. Okay. So he steals a sandwich for no fucking reason.
He steals a sandwich for no reason.
And he gets arrested.
Yes.
Wow.
And the thing is, like, did you want money? I don't know. Maybe.
Maybe he was just over it. He's whatever. I'll just steal the sandwich.
He had enough money. He could have literally skipped. He could have been in Mexico and it would have never found him.
Yeah.
He could have been in the Bahamas. He could literally be anywhere.
Right. Right.
And they wouldn't. Because before, like, they find the body of Morris Black, he wasn't wanted for anything.
Yeah.
So he could have been anywhere in the world.
Truly.
And he had the means to do it. It does not make sense. There's a guilty conscience. There's something here.
There's something going on.
There's something.
Yeah.
So, like, my next note is just the blinking and the black eyes. It's noteworthy. I don't know why, but now he's on camera a lot because there's a lot of interviews. And he does this thing where he blinks with both eyes.
And it's almost like he's, like, cutting onions or something.
Uh-huh.
He's you're right. Like, oh,
when you blink,
know.
Both of your eyes close, but, like, his whole...
Like, he scrunches.
Face moves.
Yeah.
So there's just a lot of interview footage from that time. And I'm just like, God, it's getting weirder and weirder. So he goes on trial. He is charged with the murder of Morris Black. And I'm going to run through semi-quickly how this goes.
Okay.
So the defense argument is that he claimed self-defense, stating that Morris had become aggressive and was shooting things in the apartment. Like, he pulls his gun out. He's in Bob's apartment.
Uh-huh.
He's, like, shooting at something, and he's aggressive. And Bob claims that they started scuffling over the firearm, and it was an accident that he shot Morris.
Okay.
And that he dismembered him after he freaked out.
Was there evidence of shooting in the apartment?
Yes.
Okay.
But I'm not sure that... Well, listen, I didn't spend a whole lot of time...
No, I mean, if there's evidence,
every
there's
single
evidence.
Detail.
Yeah.
Well, the prosecutors argued that Durst murdered him deliberately, and then... attempted to conceal the crime through dismemberment and disposal of the body, which is probably the truth.
Yeah.
And his defense is no. They were in a fight and he killed him and then he freaked out and then he dismembered the body to try to, like, so, like, yes, he killed him.
Yeah.
But it was in self-defense and the dismemberment was just because he didn't know what else to do.
Okay.
Well, they are in Texas and apparently that worked.
Christ.
So the outcome is, so November 11, 2003, the jury accepts the self-defense argument. I'm trying not to be offensive, but yes, I'm like, there's a lot of things. So, like, also it's Texas and there's stand your ground laws and
right to defend yourself is a big fucking thing in Texas.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It's absurd that he was acquitted. So he was acquitted despite admitting killing him and dismembering him. Yeah, so the legal team successfully maneuvered this.
Yeah, they put the reasonable doubt in the people's minds.
Yes.
Yeah.
And he, but he does have to plead guilty to bail jumping and evidence tampering. So he remains in Texas to serve parole.
Okay.
No
jail time for that.
Yeah, no jail time.
Jesus. Okay.
So in 2004, he's expecting to be paroled, but the great state of Pennsylvania slaps him with a weapons charge for his arrest at the Wegmans.
Because he had two guns on him.
Yes. Okay. So he does some jail time for that. And then is released again in 2005 for more parole for that.
Okay. So now he has to serve parole. He always do parole in Pennsylvania.
Yes.
Okay.
And then in 2006, he's arrested one more time for violating parole because he went back to Texas and he, quote, bumped into the judge that presided over his original murder trial. Okay. And that sounds like it could be a coincidence, but I think it's actually an intimidation
tactic.
Yes. Or, like, he's just a weird fucking dude. And there's, I'm not sure I put it in the notes, but I will try to remember to bring it up later.
Okay.
Because he gets in trouble for this again. So his brother had filed the protective order against him and hired private security. He gets arrested later for breaking this protective order and going to his brother's home and snooping around that townhouse where his brother lives. So he does stalking behaviors.
It's so fucking weird.
So much of it is fucking unnecessary.
Yeah. Is there something just wrong with you?
I mean, clearly there's a lot of
clearly
things.
A bit. Just
I think it's a man who gets in his own head.
Yeah.
And gets spun up.
Yeah.
And it, is like. It's,
like when they talk about like him being like a weird, violent child. There's just something
wrong
with the wiring.
Yeah, so.
It's miswired somewhere and it's in a weird fucking way and it manifests in such a weird fucking way.
Certainly. Well, the judge was at the mall and thought this was also weird.
Yeah.
Calls the police and now he has violated parole. So he has to go back to Pennsylvania and do more parole because of that probation violation.
So he's got parole in Texas and Pennsylvania?
He did the parole. He wrapped up the parole in Texas and then he was like, okay, I'm done. And then Pennsylvania was like, nah, we got you now.
Sorry, girl. Yeah, okay.
And then he still goes back to Texas. It's just... Yeah, it doesn't make sense.
No, nothing makes sense. I think we're trying to make sense of a crazy person and like it's just never going to.
Okay, so by the end of 2006, he is now out. So he's not in prison. Mm-hmm. He's got no more parole. Mm-hmm. And now he's officially gotten away with two murders scot-free.
Yeah.
That we know of. Actually, potentially three because technically Susan's already dead.
Yeah.
And that's where we're going to pick back up later next week.
Oh my God. What is happening?
I forgot about all this.
There's just so much to it. That's why I can watch it so many times. And I'm just like, oh my God.
It's truly
a saga.
A saga. It's fucking bonkers.
It's like, bonkers.
I think, so it's the Jinx, I'll Be Gone in the Dark, and The Staircase, I think are like the top three true crime, like miniseries, docuseries that really put true crime on another tier. And that everyone's trying to match.
Sure.
And I think it's because these stories are so fucking weird.
So weird.
And you truly, you watch it, you're like, I don't know what the fuck is happening. What's going to happen next. I don't know how this is going to end. And it does end in like a fucking doozy of a way.
It's just, yeah, it's stranger than fiction. It's just like,
it really is.
What the hell?
Yeah. Like you couldn't make this shit up.
No.
At all. Fucking wild.
I know.
It's weird. I forgot about all of it. Like I said,
because I asked you the other day, I was like, wait, just so I know how much of this, like how familiar. So you said you have seen the first, but I was like, okay,
yeah. So some of this will definitely be a refresher or new.
Right. Yeah.
All right. Were you having fun sitting back and relaxing?
It's weird. Out? You know? I don't want to interrupt you, but I do have so many questions and
you should interrupt.
Okay.
You should interrupt a lot more in the second half because I feel like that's a shorter episode.
Okay. That's good. That's fine.
We can wrap it all up.
We can wrap her up in a fucking weird, shitty bow.
Totally.
A post-Christmas bow. How do you feel?
Good.
Okay, good. I think you're doing great.
Yeah, I'm having fun.
Yeah, good. I told you, there was just no way I was going to do this.
Wait, we didn't have to do it.
No, we didn't
have to.
This
is definitely a little outside the norm, which is something that's a little offbeat. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's a little under the radar.
Yeah.
This is just a different one for sure.
This is a big one. And I feel like it felt right to do a big one for like our 1 year episode. I think at least personally.
Hey, girl, this is you run the show. We just follow orders over here.
That's true. What was I going to ask? Speaking of. Oh, are there any episodes from the last year that stick out to you? Or like your favorites? Or like you're just like, I want to know what happened.
Shit. Of course. Oh, like I want to know.
I mean, one or the other, you know.
I feel like if you hadn't asked me this right now or you'd given me a heads up, I would have. Because I remember telling Dave recently to listen to one. I don't remember what it was, though.
Do you remember what it was about?
Not a clue. No clue. Not a single clue. I'll have to ask him.
Yeah, I was thinking about this the other day. I guess I probably assumed that you probably would have done the same thought process because I'm a crazy person. But I feel like, I wish we could redo the David Glenn Lewis story.
Okay.
That was episode 2. That was the guy that was in Texas. And we wound up in Washington State.
Yeah, okay.
And we don't know why.
And there was like a... Yeah, they picked him up. Or
he was hit by a car.
Okay, that was like there was a road and a vehicle. Okay.
Yeah, he was hit by a car and killed, but we don't know why he was up there.
So weird.
It was such a weird story. The audio really sucks on that one.
Oh, okay.
It was our second episode.
Who cares?
I do. But that is probably the one, and Eric Lewis, the guy in Rainier, that just disappeared.
Yes.
Out of nowhere. I would love to have an answer for...
Well, I just don't know that those are out there, those answers.
Probably. I don't know. Yeah.
You think if you did enough research, you would find
it? No. I'm not saying that. No, I would say if I could have a crystal ball and
you'd
like show me what happened.
Those ones are still sticking with you.
Yeah, those ones are still sticking. Yeah. Just, we've done some good ones, I feel like.
Of course.
Yeah. But those two are like the big ones for me. God, I'd really love to know what happened. And Sandra Johnson Hughes, the woman that went missing... And then the baby said that he saw her dead in the woods.
That was crazy.
That was fucking crazy.
Actually, I forgot about that episode until now. That was crazy.
Like, what?
I know.
Yeah. We've done a lot of really good, interesting,
spooky-esque
missing person stories.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is a lot of other type things.
Yeah.
It's not like black and white.
Yeah, yeah. I do like the gray area and a lot of the stuff,
well,
too.
Well, then it leaves a lot of unanswered questions. Right. You like that? That sucks. I think it personally it's frustrating.
It does suck. I do love a nice end of the story, but at the same time, you're like, but it's just so fucking...
It's stick with you where you're just like...
It just sticks with you. You're like, what the fuck happened? I appreciate you doing these.
You're welcome.
And I appreciate you doing this whole... shenanigan with me.
Oh, okay. I didn't know we were gonna be all sentimental about it.
I mean, it's a 1 year.
Cheers to you. Cheers. And all the hard work you're doing. I have never, I obviously know better than ever how much time it takes.
You know,
so I appreciate you for that.
Yeah, it's been weird not having to do anything.
Well, you do have other things to do now.
Like, I do.
Quite a bit busier than when we originally started.
This is true. Yeah. I mean, I still have to edit this thing.
I know. I thought about that. I was like, God, and then you have to edit it? Oh, my God.
But yeah.
She does it for the love of the game.
I do it for the love. But yeah, thank you to people who've been listening for the last year.
Oh, for sure.
Listening to our bullshit for at least... 45 episodes is what we're at right now, I think.
Okay.
And that's a big deal.
Good job, Melissa.
Thank you. Good job, Megan.
All right.
But yeah, we appreciate you guys hanging out with us for the last year. We have definitely more stuff to come. We're gonna have a part 2 at least of this.
Part 2.
And I've got some good stories lined up for the next 2025.
Part 2, so we did a lot of stage setting in part 1. Mm-hmm. Part 2 was where it gets really kind of a little bit wild.
Yeah, wilder.
I think so.
Yeah, we're going to wilden out.
A little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I can't imagine it getting less crazy.
Than Dorothy Snyder.
Yeah.
That's one of the craziest bits.
It's just, what? I don't think I realized initially that he was going back and forth.
Mm-hmm.
He got married. And then was like, also,
yeah, it all happens at the same, everything is happening at the same time. I think what has happened is something bad happened with Kathy.
Yes.
In the 80s. And he had been trying to escape that situation ever since.
Yeah.
And is not doing well.
Right.
And then in 2000, he thinks maybe, okay, maybe nothing's happened. And then in 2000, they're looking at it again. Now it's 2000. It's not the 80s anymore.
Yeah.
And we're fucking spiraling.
Right.
To try to keep the lid on this thing. And now he's
trying to hide himself in plain sight.
Yeah.
And then shit just gets crazier.
All right. Well,
he does it very badly.
Yeah. We'll conclude this bullshit.
Okay.
Not bullshit.
Yeah, it should.
But next week?
Well, us right now, but next week for you guys.
It's TMI.
Nobody needs to know. Uh-oh. That we don't do everything at once. Yeah, okay. I see.
Yeah, this will be recorded in one evening for us. We don't have to wait, but no.
I mean, Missy doesn't have to wait, but the rest of you do.
Sorry.
You'll be fine. But until next time,
stay grimly curious.
Bye, bitch.
Thank you so much for listening. Music by Alex Kingston and Adam McKinnon.
For podcast photos and updates, follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Grimly Podcast.
Be sure to rate and review, and we will see you next week for another episode. Bye, bitch.